Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Smithsonian Institution's new National Museum of African American History and Culture opens to the public on September 24th. And visitors there will be greeted by the photography of Tulsan Doug Henderson. The African American story begins in Africa and the forts created by European powers to house captive Africans prior to be loaded onto ships and shipped around the world. These slave castles, as they're called, have been a longtime interest of Henderson. He's one of the only photographers in the world that has captured imagery of these prison castles on the coast of Ghana, Ivory Coast, and West Africa. His work photographing 25 of these institutions, some of which were previously unknown, formed the basis of his book, Slavery's Castles, and the traveling exhibit, Doors of No Return. They will now be a key focal point for the new Smithsonian African American History Museum later this month. Doug Henderson is a professional architectural photographer. He's worked around the world, including Ecuador, Uganda, Romania, the Andes, the Amazon rainforest, the Galapagos Island, among others. His work has appeared in the New York Times, the National Examiner, Newsweek, and Oklahoma Today. His photography has also been featured in several coffee table books, one on Omaha, one on Tulsa, and the Black Hills, among others. He's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Doug Henderson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
It's been a great pleasure getting to know some of your photography, and you specialize in architectural photography. What is it about architectural photography that sort of captures your interest?
I have an eye for symmetry and design and this sort of the way things are laid out and the harmony of stuff people have built and the way it works with the landscape. And it just seems to be a knack of mine.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it's a passion as well because you're going around the world to capture whether it's a village or a particular place or in the case of your Slavery's Castles project, a particular chapter in our history that people would probably rather forget than talk about.
That's true. That's true. And it's not that I so much set out with this in mind. I stumbled into it.
Tell me about how you got interested in photographing these abandoned, literally, castles that were built by Europeans in the early 19th century, late 18th century, that were basically used to house slaves coming to America. And right. into Europe at that point, I suppose.
Right. These were the trading posts of the slave trade. And basically, they needed a warehouse to store prisoners until they could get a slave ship in to transport them to wherever they were taking them. And so they started out with these little lodges that developed into forts, that developed into castles, huge fortified castles with the dungeons being the primary focus of the castles. They would store people here for months until they could get a slave ship in. They're very strange, unusual things. They're weird to look at. Most of us think of a castle. We picture the ones at Orlando or Anaheim. And these are grim, dark, frequently ugly forts designed for defense and housing prisoners. I see. I stumbled into the whole thing. I was in Ghana in 2004 and was photographing AIDS research at the time, had no inkling or knowledge of these places even existing. And my fixer, my handler, came in one morning and he said, Douglas, today you must see Elmina. And I presumed he was talking about a person, but Elmina turned out to be a castle. And I just breezed through there, had just a few minutes. I was amazed at the place, had never seen or heard tell of anything like this. Took a few quick snapshots and went on with the rest of my work. And when I got back to the States, I started kind of researching this and found out that there were a lot of these. Along the coast of Ghana, there's about 30 of them. And then there's a number of them scattered around the rest of the coast of Africa. What was really interesting to me was there were just no photographs of these places. Mm. For a photographer, that's the holy grail, something that's photographically interesting.
Why do you suppose nobody had taken pictures of them? Is it because they were sort of symbolize a greater evil?
I'm sure that's part of it. I think most of it is they're in off the beaten path places. No one would go there for any other reason.
Now, I would think, when I would think of these things, I would think of them being right on the coast. Are they on the coast? Because they don't appear to be.
The majority of them were built on some sort of a place where they could get ships close to. Most of them are along the coast of Ghana because most of West Africa is, the coasts are swampland and mangrove forest.
But most of the pictures I've seen, they don't look like that. They look like they're on hillsides and they're sort of up. And in fact,
they are.
And in fact, some of them, when you look at some of the ruins of some of these castles, they look like they could have been in the Scottish Highlands or in Ireland, except for maybe a little bit of foliage that gives you sort of a giveaway that you're not necessarily in those locales.
Well, but they were built by the Europeans.
Yeah, right.
And so much of their design and their structure was based on European castle architecture at the time. For instance, the Dutch built a lot of them, and they didn't really have any experience with stone masonry because there's not much stone in the Netherlands. So they would haul bricks all the way from the Netherlands.
Wow.
And ships to build the structurally important parts of the castle and fill in the rest with stone. So, yeah, there's bricks brought from Europe to build castles on the coast of Africa.
Now, after this trip in 2004 and you took these snaps back, I guess you took a look at them and you got interested in it. What began to capture your interest?
Well, because they were as historical and undocumented as they are. And I think these are important places, an important part of history that shouldn't at least be lost. And so I took it on myself to attempt to document as many of these places as I could before they deteriorated any further. I put together a proposal, outlined how I would do this, where I would go, approximately what I thought it would cost, and posted it on my website. And 3 years or so, absolutely nothing happened. Then a Tulsa businessman, Greg Merrill, called me up and said, "I saw your proposal online. I will back you 100% with one caveat. You take me with you." And Greg and I had traveled in he's a great photographer, had come through my classes at Tulsa Tech, night classes I teach there. And he and I had worked together in Ecuador and in the Galapagos. And so I knew I could count on him in this sort of an environment. And so when he told me he wanted to go, I said, "Pack your bags."
So now how many of these slave castles were there along the west coast of Africa? About 30 or so?
Well, that's a good question. There are a couple that we actually stumbled across because we were going somewhere and somebody said, "Oh, well, what about that one over so-and-so?" And it didn't show up in any of the history books.
And so some of these were undocumented.
Seemed to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was at least a couple that nobody could find. The locals, you know, they said, "Well, we think there was one something over here," and we would end up getting the best guy we could find and stumbling through the jungle for hours. It was real Indiana Jones sort of stuff, you know. But we found what there was left and photographed and documented it as best we could.
Now, what's interesting about some of these holding areas, or these holding castles, if you will, is that some are falling apart, as you might expect. Others seem like they're in fairly good shape. They've been used for other purposes. Have they been used for other purposes since the slave trade ended?
Yeah. Yeah, there's not a lot you can do with them, but some have squatters. I mean,
and some of these are huge. They're huge complexes. They probably hold, what, thousands of people?
Several of them, at least two of them, the dungeons would hold in excess of 1,000 human beings at a time.
Wow.
And the dungeons are these dark, unventilated, vaulted ceiling chambers that just link one to the next, to the next, to the next, and they seem to go on forever.
Wow. What was it like stepping foot into something like that? I think it would be hard not to feel some sort of palpable negative energy or just...
Right.
You know, I mean, did you ever get those feelings as you were photographing these places?
If I ever start believing in ghosts, that's where I would start. One of the things that touched me was I was in one of these huge dungeons, and the floor was soft, kind of like fatigue mats in factories, a sort of soft, rubbery feel to it. And this is a stone building with a stone floor and stone walls, and this was curious to me what this covering, this coating on the stone floor was. And then I realized this is the accumulation of about 300 years of skin cells, tears, sweat, urine, fecal material, blood. This just built up this layer on the floor, and here it still is.
Wow.
And that kind of rocked you back on your heels.
No doubt. As you began finding these places, how did you go about trying to document them? What was the thing you wanted to capture about these sites? For those who would be thousands of miles away, as you're photographing, are you trying to capture just what the building looks like? Is there a particular story you're trying to tell as you're photographing these things?
Well, without getting too artsy about this, you would like in a good photograph for the viewer to feel what you felt when you saw it. Of course, the only tools I've got are visual tools, and the only tools you've got are audio tools. So we're kind of working in limited mediums here, but I would look at this and try to think, what do I feel and what would I want somebody else to feel? What would they feel standing here seeing this? And I wanted to give a sense of a place where these places were in relationship to villages or the coast. And then an overall view, and then you would always look for details, little telling things that may not immediately come to mind. And so that's what I looked for. And a whole bunch of this is more the quiet side of your brain than the thinking side of your brain.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of these, I'm looking at, I believe it's Fort William. This is literally right on the beach.
Yes. Well, there's a couple of them that were built too close to the beach. And over the centuries, they fell into the sand. They had no real foundation. They just crumbled apart.
Yeah. When you're talking about trying to capture a mood, this is, there's a photograph, and I'm not sure which particular fort this is, but there is a forged chain on this stonemason floor. And what becomes evident, and what's really amazing about this, and you just pointed to this, is these chain links, large chains, it looks like. But this next to last chain link is like the ends of the chain loop have like ground down from movements of countless people straining against that restraint. Was that something you were trying to capture?
It was the amount of wear on a chain. And a chain doesn't wear unless it's under tension or stress, and how many people pulled against that chain for how many years to wear it that far.
So I assume you talked to the residents, the people around these castles. What were their reactions to them? Were they just relics? Did they hold any special significance to them? Or what exactly?
That whole chapter of world history is viewed differently over there. And it's something like many people have lived in Tulsa all their life and have never been to, you know, Boston Avenue Methodist Church. They know what's there, but they're used to it, and they don't really pay any attention to it. And so they knew these were castles. They knew what they were used for. They've always been there. It didn't hold a lot of interest for them.
Really? So it was just, like, forgotten?
Well, I suspect there are people who live a few blocks from the University of Tulsa that have never set foot on campus. They know it's here, but why would they go look at it? It's mm-hmm. just kind of in the back of their mind, but like I said, it's not something that really concerns them on a day-to-day basis. It's just there, which is sad because a lot of interesting stuff went on there, a lot of history there.
Well, a lot of horrible history, too.
Yes.
And I guess UNESCO has made them World Heritage Sites. Are the governments of the region doing anything to preserve these sites, or are they just... Because some of them look like ruins. Others look very well-constructed and look like they are in very good shape in many ways.
Well, of course, these castles were built by many different countries, and they kind of learned as they went along. The early castles didn't hold up as well. The later castles were better constructed, and they're still in fairly good shape. UNESCO has declared them World Heritage Sites, but the countries of Africa do not have the resources, the funding, to restore or really preserve these castles. And if they had the money, they've got more important things they need to work on right now anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a high priority given...
Right.
You have a picture from the north wall of the Cape Coast Castle in Ghana, and you see what would pass as... Well, I guess it's probably the best way to describe it is literally a shanty town off...
Yes.
Or what we'd say in Brazil would be a favela. It's like a...
Exactly.
Found materials to create homes, and it's literally house after house made out of corrugated tin and looks like waste wood.
Exactly.
Scraps and remnants. Now, you did this several years ago. Is the plan to eventually go back? Would you like to go back and photograph?
We photographed pretty much well all that we were aware of. But after we returned, there was a volume published called the... Atlas of the Transatlantic Slave Trade, and it alerted us to several others that we have not photographed. And for what it's worth, that would be a good legacy to have as many of these places photographically documented as possible.
My guest today is Doug Henderson, a professional photographer who specializes in architecture, and he several years ago went to Ghana, West Africa, to photograph the castles, which were holding cells for slaves. Once they were captured, they would be captured in conflicts in other places in Africa, brought to these holding castles, and then shipped to America and at one point to Europe as slaves. And his book project is titled Slavery's Castles, and he also had a exhibit that showed several places called Doors of No Return. What was the reaction when you showed these photographs in America?
The most common reaction is, we have never heard of this. We did not know these places existed. When the exhibit was in Europe, Africans would say, we did not know this. We did not know about these places. I don't mean to claim anything I'm not, but we're the only ones that have pictures of these places. There's many of them that they just don't show up anywhere. This is a very unique sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, this is not your only project you've been working on. In fact, you're working on Cuba?
Oh, I've got lots of projects. I've got all sorts of projects. Going back to Cuba, I was there this last January, and I'm going again in November.
What's the focus of that particular photographic journey?
Well, actually, I am taking a handful of photographers from the U.S. over there. And, yeah, we're going to run around Cuba. And
A particular focus of, we haven't been able to do this, so as an American photographer, I want to take pictures of Cuba because I've never been there? Or is it a matter of Cuba's inevitably going to change now that it's kind of opened back up to the United States, and we want to capture what Cuba was before it changes? Or what exactly?
All of the above.
So tell me about your first trip. What was spectacular about Cuba?
It was a crazy trip. We took a sailboat from Key West to Cuba. And they really did not know what to do with American tourists. Not tourists, I guess. We can't legally be tourists, but visitors. And we ran around Cuba, rented an old car, went off into the tobacco farming country. It's a very photogenic, very, very amazing, very different sort of place.
Well, for one, you don't have Western development for over the last 50 years.
That's so. And so it's they talk about it being stuck in kind of a time warp, and it sort of is, but this is very different, very unusual. They have come up with very odd solutions to common problems.
For example?
Well, they've got all these 50s American cars that have been there since the 50s. They've never been able to get parts. The motors have wore out, so many of them are driving around on Russian-built tractor motors. A lot of them are diesel engines. There's stuff cobbled up in ways you can't imagine.
So a 58 Chevy with a a Soviet-era Russian diesel engine.
Yes, yes. Steering or suspension or seats has been updated, but boy, it's shiny. And yeah, that's great fun to drive around Havana with in an old car, smoking a cigar. You know, life doesn't get any better than that.
So, were you concentrating your effort in the cities or in the countryside?
Well, with the amount of time we had, we spent about half of it in Havana, which is great, but Havana is not Cuba. And then we went out in the countryside in the area they call Pinar del Rio, which is tobacco country, and some of the prettier scenery. I did not make it to any of the eastern two-thirds of the island. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what I want to see this time.
Now, when you went there in January, this would have been right after Cuba opened up, right?
It really wasn't even opened up. What
did they think about an American with a camera going, saying, I want to photograph your country?
They were glad to see us.
Oh, I'm sure they were. Pink. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and just they will talk your leg off. It's great fun, incredibly open sort of group, very sociable. Multiple times invited to somebody's house to sit down and eat whatever they've got cooking. And one farmer hand-rolled us a couple of cigars, and we just had a great time. Just thought we were cousins or something.
Hmm.
That sort of openness is increasingly rare in the world.
Was it just because they hadn't seen Americans in 50 years, you think, for the most part? I mean, there have been Americans that have come over.
Well, and there have been a lot of Canadians. And sure. Europeans.
Well, Americans will come in. They'll just sneak in.
Yeah. But then many of those people have relatives that have fled to Florida. And so there's still a lot more connection than would be apparent between America and Cuba. And so that's real interesting. The architecture is interesting. The countryside is very different.
What's interesting about the architecture?
At one time, Havana must have been rolling in money.
It was in the 50s. I mean, you had mob money, you had casinos, mm-hmm. It was a wide open town, and people would fly down from New York for the weekend.
Yep. Yep. There were ferry boats that ran across.
Right.
And so there's all this stuff built, and then with Castro's revolution, and then when things really got crazy was when the Soviet Union collapsed, and their entire market and their entire source of supply ceased, and things apparently got very, very desperate for them. But so there's these incredibly elegant old structures, some of them from the colonial times, that people live in. They're still used, but they've not been able to really keep it up, and so it has this kind of a urban decay chic sort of a thing to it. Street photography is just out of this world over there. Just wander up and down the streets of Havana with a camera.
Yeah. So you're hoping to go back later this year?
Definitely. We'll leave early November.
Hmm. Now, you've got another project where you're trying to capture some mountain villages because they're literally on the verge of disappearing. This is in the Carpathian Mountains, the Hungarian-Romanian frontier, if you will.
Yeah. There's these little isolated villages up in the mountains, and they live life the way they've always lived it. They still have cattle herds and make their own brandy, and it's almost entirely self-contained. It's rare to see a gasoline-powered vehicle there. It's mainly horse carts and draft horses. Of course, because with communism, all the young people left. There was nothing for them there. And when communism fell, the young people didn't come back. So these villages are dying out. This one that I'm connected with, a place called Inlaka, there's almost nobody there below 65. And so within the next 20 years, this village will pretty well cease to exist.
Now, are they self-aware of this?
Yes.
Acutely. Are they resigned to it? Are they trying to change it? What are they doing?
Well, they understand that to really open up their homes to their village to tourism would change it forever.
They don't want to do that.
Not really, and they also don't know how to do that. you could not open a Starbucks coffee there, you know. a T-shirt shop would just seem, you know, like if it was in the Vatican or something, would just seem obscene. There's not a good answer. There isn't an answer. They will cease to exist.
So your mission is to preserve this culture as it's dying out?
Oh, I'm not a a saint here or anything, but this is something very special and very beautiful, and I would like to preserve that. That's my great blessing in life, is to have seen so many places other people don't see, and if I can be their eyes and show them these wonderful, beautiful, amazing, interesting, and sometimes horrible places. That's my mission.
Yeah, well, certainly you've done that with slavery's castles. I'm interested when you're seeing like a village dying out, do you change your focus from the architectural element to the human element? Does that go hand in hand?
Well, if this isn't overanalyzing this, so all of the architecture there was built by humans in a time and a place. The church that sits on the hill is over 600 years old. It's a medieval fortress. It has a wall around it.
Probably a young house there is a couple hundred years old.
Yes. Yes, the houses are ancient red tile, clay tile roofs, built the way they used to build things. There's not a square corner or a straight line or a level in the whole place. To watch them farm with horses is just such a beautiful thing. This is an amazing, wonderful place that I hate to see it go away.
Yeah. As long as you take pictures of them, it never really truly will.
Well, that's the idea. That's a limited thing, but it's the best I've got.
Doug Henderson, thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Professional photographer Doug Henderson speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. The Tulsans' work documenting slave castles along the West African coast will be a key component of the new Smithsonian Institution's National Museum of African American History and Culture, which opens on the Mall in Washington, D.C. on September 24th. For more information about his work, visit his website at douglashenderson.com. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.